Good afternoon. I'd like to call the Transportation and Transit Policy Subcommittee to order. And our first item of business is approval of the minutes. So Representative Leader moves to approve the minutes of January 17th. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion carries. We have two bills on the agenda today. The first is House File 147. Then we'll get to House File 106 after that. So I'd like to call on the author of the bill, Chairman Johnson. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'd like to move House File 147.
Okay. Representative Leader moves House File 147, and the motion is to go, I believe, to the state.
We don't have a quorum, do we?
Wait, no.
Or do we?
Yep, we have. Yeah. You want to, I believe the motion is to go to state government finance. After
that sounds right, Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
Okay, so we're moving approval of the bill on its way to state government finance. Welcome, Chairman Johnson.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. The bill we have before you is a fairly simple one. What it does is changes the expiration date of the Mississippi River Parkway Commission from June 30th of this year, 07, to June 30th of 2012. And the reason I'm presenting this bill is because I'm the newly elected chair of this commission, and I'm a strong proponent of the mission that this particular commission does, and I hope you look forward favorably on this bill. I have with me today Mr. Andy Galtas, who's the secretary of this commission and also serves on the national board as its pilot or chair, and he can answer any questions you might have as well.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Johnson, please state your name for the tape.
Yes, my name is Andrew Galtas, and I'd like to point out that there is a handout, and that should be distributed to folks, which is a brief overview of the Minnesota-Mississippi River Parkway Commission. It'll give you the background, the history, what our mission is, what we brought into the state financially, and hopefully answer those questions that you may have. If there are any particular ones, we can address them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Galtas. Any questions or comments from committee members? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just was curious about, maybe it's here and I haven't seen it, but how many members are on this, the 15-member commission established by law, but who appoints those? Does the governor appoint those every year or every other year? Or what's the...
There's different responsibilities for the appointing process. The House Speaker, for example, appoints for the House two members, and the Senate has two appointees, and then the Department of Transportation makes an appointment, and the Department of Natural Resources and Department of Commerce. And then there's also, I think, four at-large members that are appointed as well.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, are those going to... Now, they're not going to continue for 15 years here or 5 years or whatever you're extending it. There's going to be some changes on the board, or how does that work?
Well, that's correct. There's always changes on the board. In fact, I met with Senator Sendrum today, who was the chair just a couple months ago, and he concurred with that idea too, that we continue to have that transition of new members to get new blood, and that's what we've been doing and we'll continue to do.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, comments from members? Then with that, Representative Leader renews his motion. Scared you there. Have House File 147 pass and be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much, Representative Johnson. You're on your way to Representative Kahn, State Government Finance Committee. Our next bill is Representative Thiessen's House File 106.
Thank you.
believe also Representative Leader will move this bill as well. Representative Leader, will you move this bill as well?
I'll move House File 106 and be referred to the Public Safety Committee. Is that correct?
That's our understanding. Is that your understanding, Representative Thiessen?
If it doesn't have to go to Representative Leaders Committee, that would be
yes. That's based on some discussions we had. That's the proper next stop. So, welcome to the committee, Chairman Thiessen.
Thank you. And thank you, Chair and members. This legislation is the primary seatbelt bill, which we have had in the House, well, at least as long as I have been here, which is since 2002 and before that as well. And what the bill does is fairly simple. It makes what is already against the law, which is driving without a seatbelt, a primary offense instead of a secondary offense. So a police officer would be able to pull you over for violating that law instead of having to pull you over for another violation. It's as straightforward as that. I would like to do one author's amendment, if I could, that is just an oral amendment, but fairly straightforward with the chair's permission, and I'll describe it for you.
Sure. I'll move that amendment, Mr. Thiessen.
It's on lines 2.9 to 2.16 and lines 2.30 to 3.3. And what we're doing in those sections under the way it's currently drafted is trying to conform that to the changes in Section 1. So make a primary seatbelt offense for these provisional drivers and instructional permit drivers. What the Senate has now done, and I think it's just an easier way to accomplish the same thing, is just to strike those sections entirely. So I would move to strike subdivision, to strike lines 2.9 to 2.16. Strike them actually as striking them out of case law or out of law, and strike 2.30 to 3.2, which accomplishes the same thing just in a simpler way and reduces statutes.
Okay. Any discussion or questions concerning the author's oral amendment? Okay, let's move that amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. The motion carries. We have the bill in its form.
Thank you.
Discussion and debate.
Mr. Chair.
Please, Representative Thiessen.
Members, not wearing a seatbelt results in major human tragedies in Minnesota every year. And by passing this law, we can take a concrete step toward changing that, toward saving lives. 40 lives a year is estimated, avoiding 400 serious injuries. And for that reason alone, I think that passing this bill makes sense. But in addition to those individual tragedies and family tragedies, we have a stake as a community, I think, in avoiding those loss of lives and avoiding those serious injuries. We do because of lost productivity of people and the lost opportunity of those lives that are lost. And we do in hard dollar numbers as well. You know, healthcare is one of the issues I work a lot on, and we've had a lot of discussion at the Capitol this year and in past years about saving healthcare costs. This really is one way we can accomplish that. An unbelted driver, the medical cost for an unbelted driver in a crash is 50 to 100% higher than the medical cost for a belted driver. And those are dollars that we could otherwise spend reducing people's premiums or expanding access to health care or doing any number of other things. In addition, just in general to our state government, the estimates are that we'll save $85 million for our state government through the over the next 8 years, I guess, through 2015. Again, that's money we can be that can be better spent on positive things instead of these tragedies. So for those reasons alone, I think this makes a lot of sense. Two other points, and then there's going to be testifiers who are going to have a lot more information for you on the reasons to do this. We have a federal incentive to pass this year of $15 million that our state could then use for safety improvements, for safety patrol officers to make our roads more safe. And as we know, we've had transportation, as you know, on this committee more than anybody else, a lot of difficulties with transportation funding. That's money we could really put to good use. The last thing I would say is a statewide poll shows that 70 or 71% of Minnesotans favor passage of this legislation. I think that's important. I think there's been an education process that's occurred over several years as this bill has been heard. I think this year is the time to do it. And with that, I think it would be best, unless people have questions about the bill, to go to some testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Yes, thank you very much, Representative Thiessen. We have a few testifiers. I have every belief that we'll be able to get to a vote today, but if the folks testifying can just, you know, keep it relatively brief, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of discussion among committee members. But our committee ends at 3:45, and we do plan to vote today. So I want the witnesses to, and members to keep that in mind. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm reading the House research blurb, and it says it increases the fine from 25 to 50. Now, is that, I don't think I find that in the bill.
Mr. Chair, that's not my understanding either.
It says $25, Mr. Chairman, in the bill. Is that your feeling about it? Or?
We can have a quick comment from House Research on that.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, I prepared the bill summary, and that's a mistake. It was a holdover from last year's bill, which did that. And sorry, I omitted it in a couple of places, but must have missed one.
One more question, Mr. Chairman. Representative Thiessen, can you, at the present time, are people riding in the back seat of a passenger vehicle exempt? Because this says repeals the exemption. I wasn't aware of that. So there must be an exemption for people riding in the back seat from wearing a seatbelt now. Am I correct? And now we're going to tell them they have to do it.
Mr. Chair, under print line, you actually can see it, I think, in the bill. If you look at the crossed-out line at 1.14 and 1.15, passengers in the... let me see. Passengers in the back seat who are between 3 and 11, I think, still have to... be buckled under current law. This would eliminate that exception, so every passenger in the you are correct. Every passenger in the vehicle would have to be belted now.
Thank you.
But there was an exemption previously for some people.
Okay. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just a recommendation to Representative Thiessen that you might want to make an amendment as well on line 1.4 where it says, 1.3, increasing the fine for seatbelt violations. I want to strike that.
Thank you. Can we actually do that in the title? Why don't we do that?
House Research, we should amend, we ought to vote to amend the title.
Mr. Chair, yes, I would. I mean, an appropriate amendment would be to delete that on page 1, line 3, delete everything after the semicolon.
Okay. Representative Houseman moves this author's oral amendment. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion carries. So, excellent. Well, thank you, members, for those questions. Why don't we start with our first witness, Catherine Burke Moore. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Moore, Burke Moore. And why don't you please state your name and title for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Catherine Burke Moore, and I'm the Deputy Director of the Office of Traffic Safety in the Department of Public Safety. Representative Thiessen has asked me to be here today to provide you with information about seatbelt use in Minnesota. Our office uses crash reports to do a lot of things to increase traffic safety, reduce fatalities and injuries on Minnesota's roadways. We actually have three researchers that's what they do year-round is crash data off of the crash reports. And so that's where a lot of this data comes that I'm going to share with you today.
Proceed.
Okay. Now I need to know what button I even push with it. I know how to make the PowerPoint. I don't know it from there. Somebody's got to show me everything else. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Excuse me. This first graph shows you the last 20 years of traffic fatalities in Minnesota. We chose to show 20 years because it was 20 years ago that the first seatbelt bill was passed. And as you'll see, we have bounced around somewhat between the upper 600 and the mid 500 in deaths in Minnesota. this year, 2006, right now we have a preliminary number of 481 fatalities, which is the lowest we've had, if you've noticed in the newspapers and the media in the last month, since World War II, which is actually very good. We're very proud of that. We don't have all the crash reports in and all the fatalities, so that may raise some, but we don't expect it to go under 500, so we are making progress, and we're pleased with that, with many of things in our program. But when you look at progress, the people in our office, what we're all about is, again, saving lives and preventing injuries. And we're not satisfied with just being similar to where we were in World War II. We want to see that number go down and down. This number of people that are killed in traffic fatalities, to me, is an unexpected and a violent death. And we don't accept homicides as something that's acceptable. We want to make that lower and lower. As you see in Minnesota over the last 20 years, that's been in the 100 to mid-100s. Yet we have four times as many traffic fatalities. We want to see that to continue to go down in Minnesota. One way that we have achieved that reduction in traffic fatalities is by increasing seatbelt use in this state. The blue line across this graph shows how seatbelt use has changed in Minnesota. The first box, which is tan, you'll see 20% in 1985, right before the first seatbelt law was passed in 86. And then it did go up significantly, about 10 percentage points. In that period in the tan box, there was also the first fine of $10 in 88, and then that fine was raised in 91. And you'll see, again, little bumps in that line with those changes. In the pink or orange box in the middle, during that time, no changes in law, but one of the things that our office did with the federal funding that we received is fund a lot of enforcement and enforcement waves concentrating on belts. We did other issues as well, but we did a number on belts where we'd have law enforcement agencies across the state enforcing the law. We'd have a wave where everybody would do it on one weekend or during one week, and also publicize that through the media, generally through newspaper articles, so the public knew that was happening. That also did have, as you can tell, some increase in seatbelt use. Over that 10 years, we got up to 80%. The green box, what was enhanced during that time, was actually national efforts. You probably are familiar with the phrase click it or ticket, because that's a phrase that came out of NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. They branded that name and had every state in the U.S. use that name. They also bought national airtime for that phrase to really encourage people to buckle their seatbelts. So we saw another jump at the beginning of 2000 with that click it or ticket campaign. But you'll also see in that green box that looks like we've kind of plateaued. We're not moving a lot higher. And 2006, our last study, we're at 83%. We actually went down a percentage point between 2006 and 2005. When you look at that blue line again, we'll show that little gap. So we've got 17% not buckling up. And when you look at the progress we made, it's like, wow, that's great. Is that good enough? 17%. I'll show you that same line again. 17% not buckling up. The blue line is the same blue line you've seen on the other chart. That's our observed seatbelt use in Minnesota. What the red line is the people that have died in crashes belted. Sounds kind of counterintuitive, but a seatbelt won't save you for everything. Some crashes are so horrific with speed, or there's items in the car that can fly around that aren't, which can include people, that are not strapped down, that can still cause death. But that means 60%, that 40% of those killed that were belted, 60% killed were unbelted. Go back again, 17% not belting, but 60% of our deaths are unbelted fatalities. Now, that's a bunch of statistics, but let's talk about statistics of people. Who's dying in these crashes? Majority of them are young. 25% are between the ages of 15 and 24. 25%. 61% are under the age of 45. Men, I'm sure you heard, was that just last week where they had the big national report about who's safer drivers, men or women? 67% of fatalities are men. Men are less likely to wear their belts as well as taking risky, showing risky behavior in the car. Rural, 70% of our fatalities are in the rural area, even though we all know the most of the population lives in the metro area. 72% are in areas classified as rural in Minnesota. 35% are impaired, and 29% of our fatalities have speeding as a contributing factor. We find this in our office. We're data geeks. We find this to be very interesting, that this is the number of the seatbelt use by impaired drivers. You all know that 0.08 is our legal limit. The top line, 50%, this is again showing dead drivers. All dead drivers, by the way, by statute, have to be tested for alcohol. And so that's where we get this data. With no alcohol in the system, we see 50% use. But as more and more alcohol, more and more the drivers, more and more impaired, watch that use go down. Their judgment even in buckling up. If you hit 08, they're at the lowest percent and pretty much stays there as they're higher. As data geeks, we find that interesting with that connection between alcohol and belt use. This shows speed. Kind of a confusing graph, but again, it shows speed as a contributing factor and belt use and by age. And that's where you see, again, the younger more involved, about 40%. Okay, we talked about people, and we often hear that it's an individual. If I choose not to buckle up, the only person I hurt and it affects is myself. But this is a campaign that we used before the national click it or ticket. We used buckle up or pay the price to try to encourage people to buckle up in Minnesota. Who does pay the price? Well, of course, the ultimate price is the families who lose someone in a crash or have someone severely injured and deal with those medical costs and the medical problems. 500 deaths, we may reach about 500 in 2006, and about 260 of those unbelted, over half, 60%. Businesses are also affected by this. Motor vehicle crashes added $16.3 billion to the health-related portion of employers' fringe benefit rates. That's crashes alone. $7.7 billion for health care costs, and $8.6 billion for sick leave, life and disability insurance benefits for crash victims. And society pays. Nationally, crashes result in $230.6 billion in economic loss. 85% of medical costs are borne by society, Medicare, Medicaid, and other taxpayer sources pay 24% of these costs. And Representative Thiessen already gave you the stats, but when a crash victim is unbuckled, their health care costs are 50% higher than someone who is buckled. What do we know in traffic safety? Well, we know that belt use does save lives. It keeps families intact, and it does save money. Strong enforcement of strong laws increases belt use. You saw that back on that chart I showed earlier with the red in the middle. When we started our enforcement campaigns, you saw it go up. And so a lot of the people that will buckle up because of our current law seem to be buckling up. NHTSA studies and experiences in other states strongly suggest that a stronger law in Minnesota would increase our belt use. We would expect an increase of that percentage of 83% to go up approximately 10% with a primary law. What else do we know? Our strong enforcement efforts have reached a point of diminishing returns. We spend hundreds of thousands of dollars each year in enforcement programs in Minnesota, and yet over the last 5 years we've kind of bottomed out. We kind of stay right in that 83-84%. It doesn't seem to be reaching that 17%. And as I mentioned earlier, belt use actually dropped last year despite, again, a full-fledged safe and sober campaign is what we call our enforcement campaign, and good public information and use of the media to advertise it to our public. I also want to tell you about some incentives, monetary incentives that are available to Minnesota, that would come to Minnesota if we pass a primary law. First of all, I want to explain what a primary law that would fit this incentive funding means. Representative Thiessen's bill does have the two pieces that we'd need in Minnesota to consider a primary law that would bring us this incentive funding. The two enhancements in this law is, first of all, the primary enforcement. You can stop just for not wearing seatbelts. And the second, you already started, we're discussing it, is that every seat, no matter what your age, everybody must be buckled up. Those two pieces of the law have to be there in order to qualify Minnesota for incentive funding. There are actually two incentives. The first one on this slide, $15 million, is a one-time incentive fund. It can be used for anything in the, it's actually in Section 405, which is generally any safety improvement to the roadway. At least $1 million must be spent on a behavioral program, but the rest can be spent on roadway programs. The three dots underneath there, we have a multi-agency group, which is a planning group, safety group, called Toward Zero Deaths. I hope some of you have heard about that, and if not, we'd love to educate you more about our Toward Zero Deaths program, where we work with MnDOT, Public Safety, Health, a number of other agencies and local agencies to reduce traffic fatalities. That group would suggest that that money be split between speed enforcement, cable medium barriers, like you see along 94, and also aid then out to the local counties and roads for engineering programs. There's also another grant of $1.6 million, which actually there's more than that. It would come over 3 years, that would be used for enforcing the seatbelt bill and also educating people about the seatbelt bill, including advertisement, so that no one is nabbed for a seatbelt, primary seatbelt offense, because they didn't know about it. You'd know about it with that type of money. There are two more years, $900,000 and $600,000 approximately would come in subsequent years to Minnesota. I'd like to close with a quote from Norman Mineta, the former Secretary of Transportation. We are in the midst of a national epidemic. If this many people were to die from any one disease in a single year, Americans would demand a vaccine. The irony is we already have the best vaccine available to reduce death tolls on our highway. Seatbelts. Thank you, and I could answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Burkmore. Any questions from the committee, Representative Earhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I was at NCSL, Washington and Transportation Committee, they talked about, I asked them how many lives they thought Minnesota would save by doing this. I think it was around 15 lives a year. Do you have any figures on that?
Actually, Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, our figures are about 40 lives a year.
40 lives?
Yes.
That would be an improvement.
Mr.
Chairman, I have a suggested amendment here that we extend the seatbelt and helmets to motorcycle riders. I just saw the No, I withdraw that.
Representative Earhart withdraws his proposed amendment.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions of the committee? Well, thank you very much, and if you can stick around if anything comes up, that would be great. Thank you again, Ms. Burkmore. Our next witness is Dr. Merle Hillman. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Hillman. Please state your name and title for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Hornstein and members. My name is Dr. Merle Hillman. I'm an emergency physician. I've been an emergency physician in Minnesota since 1980. I've worked at Fairview Southdale Hospital, Fairview Ridges Hospital, and since 1989 I've been either the associate director or director of emergency medical services at United Hospital in St. Paul. I currently serve as president-elect of the Minnesota chapter of the American College of Emergency Physicians. And today I'd like to express strong support for House File 106. The American College of Emergency Physicians has a long-standing policy of making failure to wear a seatbelt the primary offense for the simple reason that upgrading our seatbelt laws will increase seatbelt use and save lives and decrease the severity of motor vehicle accident-related injuries. I can tell you that the Minnesota Medical Association, representing 1,000 physicians, residents, and medical students in the state, supports this bill as well. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, wearing a seatbelt reduces the risk of death and severity in crash on an average of more than 50%. Passing this legislation is one of the most efficient and cost-effective ways to increase seatbelt usage in Minnesota. The Minnesota Department of Public Safety has found that traffic crashes are the leading cause of death and injury for people ages 4 to 44 in Minnesota. In fact, traffic crashes kill more children each year than all of childhood diseases combined. The impact on the body from a crash at 35 miles an hour while not wearing a seatbelt is the equivalent of falling from a third-story window. You can imagine the damage at higher, more common speeds would be a lot worse. People wearing seatbelts reduces the risk of fatal injury to front seat passengers in a light truck by 60% and by 45% in front seat passengers in a car. Although rollover accidents are less frequent, they do account for 32% of passenger vehicle occupant fatalities, and rollover seatbelts are 74% effective in preventing death in cars. But it's not just about facts and figures. We're talking about people's lives. As an emergency physician, I'm really all too familiar with fatalities and serious injuries resulting from motor vehicle accidents. I remember very vividly an accident that occurred when early on a Sunday morning, a car containing a family, a man 32, a woman 35, and their two children, 6 and 8, across the median on westbound 212 and struck into another vehicle. The man was declared dead at the scene. The woman was ejected from the car. The American College of Surgeons and the Advanced Trauma Life Support course says that your chances of dying are tenfold higher when you're ejected from a vehicle. We attempted to resuscitate the mother, and despite all of our efforts, I remember declaring her dead and having to tell her children, ages 6 and 8, that their mom and dad had died in this horrible traffic accident. It was awful, and that vision remains with me to this day. More recently, about a month ago, we had one of our first snowstorms in this relatively mild winter, and there were two accidents that came in on the same day that I saw at United Hospital in St. Paul. One was a relatively minor accident, and one was a little more severe. The more severe accident, the driver was wearing a seatbelt. The seatbelt worked well, and the airbag deployed, and this person had relatively minor injuries. A neck film was all that was required to clear her, and then the rest of her injuries were just some scrapes from the airbag deploying, and she was discharged home with a prescription for some relatively mild pain medication, and subsequently did very well. The other accident was actually a less severe accident, but the driver was not wearing a seatbelt. His head scarred the windshield, resulting in lacerations and injuries to the face and the head. His chest hit against the steering wheel, resulting in a sternal contusion, and his knees hit against the dashboard. This was reminiscent of the kind of injuries that we were seeing very often in the 80s when I first began practice, and I actually spent hours sewing up lacerations, picking glass out of the scalp, and that sort of thing. But to me, it's so clear that the severity of injuries when you're wearing a seatbelt are so much less than when you're not wearing a seatbelt that this makes just a tremendous amount of sense to me that we would want to protect our citizens. My experience is not unique. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration estimates that upgrading Minnesota's law to a primary offense could save 40 lives and prevent more than 400 serious injuries, as was stated before. 40 stories, 40 families, 40 people who will live. This bill has the potential to save even more than adult lives. An American Academy of Pediatrics study shows a direct correlation between driver seatbelt use and child restraint use. When the driver buckles up, then the kids buckle up about 47% of the time. When the driver doesn't buckle up, the kids are restrained only about 24% of the time. In addition to saving lives, upgrading Minnesota's seatbelt law has the potential to save precious health care dollars. The Coates study that was released last year, has previously been cited in testimony, estimated that there would be a cumulative health care savings of $189.7 million over 10 years for hospital inpatient and emergency room use alone if seatbelt usage was created was increased to 94%. Currently, 83% of Minnesotans comply with mandatory seatbelt laws. The study that was released by the National Highway Transportation Safety Agency says that seatbelt use averages 11% higher in primary law states. There are currently 25 states in the country that utilize this primary seatbelt law, including the District of Columbia. In the state of Washington, their compliance rate increased from 81% to 94% after passage of this bill. In 2005, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety stated that primary seatbelt laws have resulted in a 7% reduction in auto-related deaths. Several years ago, Princess Diana was involved in a horrible car accident. It was in a Mercedes-Benz equipped with the state-of-the-art airbags. Three people in that car were not belted. One was belted. The one that was belted lived. Airbags are designed to protect people in the correct position. When you're not wearing a seatbelt, airbags are dangerous. We need to keep our fellow Minnesotans buckled up. It's even more dangerous now that the technology has put seatbelts in, or airbags in all the cars, and side bags in. And I just think that it's time that we're not on the frontier here. We're the 25 states have already done this. I think it's time to move ahead. I want to thank you for your time and on this very important issue, and I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you, Dr. Hillman. Questions for Dr. Hillman from the committee, Representative Earhart.
I'd hate to monopolize this, but I don't see anybody else volunteering questions, so I will. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doctor, have you ever observed anyone's death occurring because they were wearing a seatbelt?
No.
All right, thank you.
I've heard that before. I've seen bruises from seatbelts, but I've never seen deaths or serious injuries because of a seatbelt.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Well, we really appreciate your testimony, Dr. Hillman. Thank you for coming down. Our next witness is Sheriff John Sanner from Stearns County. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, Representative Stearns.
Correct.
Okay. Sheriff Sanner, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and title for the record.
My name is John Sanner. I'm the sheriff in Stearns County. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, for the opportunity to come and talk with you today. Right now, I'm representing all 87 sheriffs in the state of Minnesota by way of the Minnesota State Sheriffs Association. So every one of the sheriffs in your home counties is supportive of a primary seatbelt law. Matter of fact, if you look around the room, you'll see other uniforms in the room. And I will also tell you that law enforcement in the state of Minnesota is united in steadfast support of a primary seatbelt law. We are the first responders. We are the people that go to these car crashes and see what's happened. I would extend it beyond law enforcement. I would say any first responder in the state of Minnesota would support a primary seatbelt law. It just makes sense to do that. As elected representatives in the state of Minnesota, your mission really is to do the right thing. And believe me when I tell you, this is absolutely the right thing to do. A primary seatbelt law will automatically do three things, and you've already heard what they are. Number one, simply by making this a primary offense, we're going to save lives. We know that. By making this a primary offense, we're going to reduce serious injury. We're also going to save money. Please pass this bill as a primary offense in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sheriff Sanner. Questions from the committee for the sheriff? Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Our next witness, and hopefully I'll get this one correct as well, Lonnie Kijos. Kijos? From Chos. Okay. Alexandria, so thank you for venturing all the way down here. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please state your name and the other pertinent information for the record.
Lonnie Schultz from Alexandra. I'm a parent. Good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity to address you. Did you want to? Okay. David and I are parents of four children. Our daughter Kelsey was killed in a car crash on November 8, 2004. We are still parents of four. I am still her mom. Death takes away so many things, but it will never take away the fact that she was here. She was and still is ours. It was a beautiful fall day. I had given a ride to school that morning because her car was in the shop. School was out at 2:30, and she caught a ride home from a girlfriend. The driver lost control of the car, and it rolled. The driver was belted, and she had only a simple hand injury. Our Kelsey was not wearing her seatbelt and was thrown from the vehicle. She was airlifted to HCMC, but she did not survive the flight. We will always wonder what exactly happened that day. Why didn't she have her belt on? As a driver, she always wore it. And as a passenger with me, I know it was always on. She just automatically reached for it and it never questioned it. Did she unfasten her belt to reach for something, or did she just plain forget? We will never know. Just that one click would have made all the difference in the world to everyone that loved her. She would have been a bridesmaid in her brother's wedding this past August. She would be a freshman at the University of Minnesota. She would be calling me daily to share her highs and lows. At least as a mom, I hope she would be calling me daily. But now everything has changed. Our entire community has felt the loss of Kelsey. Her fellow classmates at Jefferson High School started a Click It for Kelsey program to raise awareness regarding seatbelt use. They sold green wristbands, made several presentations to schools, and visited with legislators. We all should be very proud of our young adults. I am a member of our Douglas County Safety Coalition, and we are very optimistic that our community is totally behind this bill. Minnesota is moving in the right direction, but just not fast enough. There are too many of our loved ones dying and being severely injured. They are both young and old and from all walks of life. Every community has their own Kelsey story. I am sure that many of you have one of your own. It is time to make a difference. It is time to stop the loss. Kelsey's short 17 years impacted the lives of so many. It makes me sad to think of all the people who will not get a chance to know her. She had a smile that would either melt your heart or make you wonder what she was going to be up to next. She was one of those teenagers who was wise beyond her years and on track to becoming a person who would make a difference in the world around her. She envisioned herself as a film director one day. She was a loyal friend, awesome sister, and a loving daughter. David and I always tell our children to make someone smile, and that is just what she did through her humor and unique ways. She never excluded anyone, whether she was at school, competing in sports, at work, in the community, or at home. She always had her head on straight. I would do anything to not be here today. The truth is, I should have been here 6 years ago. You see, in 2000, our oldest son was also in a car crash. He was alone and was wearing his belt. He was airlifted to HCMC just like Kelsey. He sustained a brain injury, and I'm very thankful to report that he has made a complete recovery. But why didn't I use this crash as an incentive to get this law passed back then? It is because until tragedy strikes right in your own heart, most constituents are detached from what is happening here in the political arena. I never was very political, and I just assumed that laws were being made that would protect my family and myself. I took for granted the work that you do here. I forgot that I have a voice, and that the only way you know what we need is by us speaking up. Well, here I am, and I know that I speak for many. If only I had been pounding the steps of my Capitol years ago, maybe we'd have Kelsey in our arms today. It has been over 2 years since Kelsey died, but it seems like yesterday. We can't change the past, but you are in the position to change the future. Imagine your loved ones on our roads without their seatbelts on. Ask yourself, would you want law enforcement to be able to stop them, especially if you knew that action, that ticket, would have saved their life? We sure wish that could have happened on that fateful November afternoon in 2004. Kelsey's family and friends have been entrusted with the memories of her life. Now David and I are entrusting you with the story of her death. Please let her story, her death, and the deaths of so many others move you to pass this bill. Add Minnesota to the growing list of states that recognize seatbelt usage can no longer be a choice. It is a necessity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Chose. Any questions for Ms. Chose? Okay. Members, thank you. Thank you for coming down and for your moving testimony. We have our final witness in support of the bill is our Commissioner of the Department of Safety, Mr. Campion, joining us. Thank you. We're honored to have
members,
you here, Commissioner.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. I fully appreciate the philosophy that government shouldn't overly interfere in people's lives, but I have four different perspectives, I think, on this piece of legislation. I certainly won't regurgitate what already has been said. First, the governor in the past has supported this legislation. My understanding is that he supported it when he was a legislator as an author, and if it gets to his desk, he'll sign it. Second, there is very few pieces of legislation, I think, that come before you that you actually have some be able to have some very measurable outcomes. You can argue some of the figures if you like. It might be 50 lives saved, it might be 40, but I don't think you can dispute the fact that 10 or 20 or 30 lives for sure will be saved if this legislation passes. Second, again, the numbers could be argued. 400 life-changing, life-altering, life-dismembering crashes might be saved. Say it's only 200. I don't think there's any question that substantial outcomes can be identified and measured in the event that this legislation is passed. Third, I think this legislation has a couple of very unique features. Oftentimes, legislation that comes before legislators may be controversial in the sense that not many people maybe might not like it. You might think it's good public policy. This piece of legislation has a 71% of, according to a survey, support from the public, and 83% of the driving public already adheres to this law. Second, sometimes there's legislation that legislators will know is good public policy, but it may cost $2, $3, $5, $10 million. And do you put money into this piece of legislation? You put it into education, transportation, any of the other challenges that come before you as legislators. This legislation doesn't cost any money. In fact, there is a fiscal note on it, but it's a $50 million incentive to the state of Minnesota. So this legislation, with its outcomes, don't cost anything. Lastly, I would say that, convey to you that Newt Gingrich, I think, said one time about politicians, be about something that's going to happen anyway. 0.08 was a law that was passed here a couple years ago, and I think if we were the last state perhaps in the union, in the country, to pass it, some people said that was probably not something to be terribly proud of. If you read the paper lately, Minnesota in 2006 probably will experience the lowest traffic fatality rate since World War II. Again, the lowest traffic fatality rate since World War II. I think collectively as public safety, law enforcement, and first responders, we know what works. We think without any question that primary seatbelt will contribute to something that will reduce the traffic fatalities and the life crash, life's altering crashes in the state of Minnesota. And I would suggest to you that a legislator that contributes to that is really something to be proud of, and I'd ask for your support.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Campion. Any questions from the committee for the commissioner? Okay. Thank you for your testimony. That concludes the testimony from supporters of the bill. We have two opponents, but I also wanted to call your attention. There are some comments from Mr. Samuelson from the American Civil Liberties Union in your packet. That has the ACLU logo on it. I don't believe that Mr. Samuelson is there anyone from the ACLU that's actually here? Okay. So maybe peruse those comments and
Mr. Chair,
some concluding comments.
Well, no, I also think in your packages some letters of support as well of people who didn't testify, but there's letters in the package.
Okay.
Just to point that out as well.
Actually, yeah, and Representative Thiessen, we have two opponents, but then I'll let you make some concluding comments if needed. So let me call on the opponents. Our first witness is Donette Triantafilthou. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Please, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and any other pertinent information and title for the record.
My name is Donette Triantafilthou, and I'm a citizen and a resident of Minnesota. First, before I start, I'd like to say when anyone is driving with me, if I'm carrying somebody, they need to be buckled up. But the reason I do not want the seatbelt as a major offense is in two situations I was sideswiped or side impact driver's side. Had I been wearing a belt, I would have been killed or worse yet be a vegetable. The first time my car was hit, it was hit on the center post. It pushed the driver's door in and the driver armrest hit my hip. The impact shifted me to the passenger side. Had I been belted, I would have at least broken my pelvis. Maybe internal organs would have been damaged. As it was, I ended up with a bruised hip for a few weeks. The second time, the side impact was on the front post. My head hit the unupholstered center post. I ended up on the passenger side with a cut skull. Had I been belted in, my head would have hit the center post that was unupholstered more than once. I could have fractured my skull, been killed, or worse yet, left as a veggie. Seat belts may be good for front and back impact, but not for side swipes. Even though these things happened years ago, I still have what closest could be described as urban stress syndrome. When a vehicle is coming from my left, and I'm driving, and they don't stop at an intersection, or they go into the intersection before they stop, the pit of my stomach gets upset, and I get really nervous. And it's been a long time since those accidents happened. For this reason, wearing a seatbelt should be left to a driver. Anyway, passengers who ride with me must be buckled up. But for myself, I get scared shitless, pardon my English, when the car does not stop when it's supposed to. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Triantafilthou. Any questions of the witness? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. We have one final witness, Mr. Gary Finsell. Is Mr. Finsell here?
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Finsell, welcome to the committee. State your name and other identifying information for the record.
My name is Gary Finsell. I'm a resident of Prior Lake, Minnesota. Right now I'm pretty much a computer guy at a healthcare industry, but my background more is in the courier industry, which I was in for 13 years. I don't approach you as a courier, but as just a resident of Minnesota who has seen many laws passed by the government that basically just tell us how to live our lives. The first point I want to make out is that as far as public safety goes, I highly believe in public safety and that the government should do what it can to protect us against force and fraud. Even if that means redesigning of some of the roads. We had I had submitted two letters pertaining to two different interchanges within our freeway system. First of which was Dakota County 46 and Highway 52 in the little town of Coates, where once the interchange was opened, or the intersection was opened, we had two deaths in a matter of 2 weeks. I had written a letter to DOT, to the Minnesota Department of Transportation, who responded back and saying, we will do something about that, and sure enough, they had closed down the intersection and put in an interchange. Another incident was down in I-35 and I-90. Forgive me, it's not an incident, but just a note that I had written to a letter to the Department of Transportation in Rochester saying that when they had rebuilt the bridge, the loop was putting that went from 90 eastbound to 35 northbound was putting 35 mile an hour traffic to merge in with 70 mile an hour traffic, and that they should change that, and I had successfully gotten them to repaint the lines. So as far as the public safety aspect goes, I'm all for it. As far as the government protecting me against myself, that's where it just rubs me the wrong way. I'm a strong advocate for if I'm not harming anybody else, don't tell me how to live my life. Comments were made about all the lives that could be saved if government implements this law. We could probably save a lot more lives, too, if we had a universal speed limit in the state of Minnesota, 35 miles an hour. We could ban all automobiles altogether. That would save all traffic deaths. But I don't think anybody's going to be for that, and I'm certainly not for that either. The last thing I want to point out is that law enforcement on the road, state patrol, county deputies, and municipal police, out there to protect and to serve. They protect me when they pull over the drunk driver. They protect me when they pull over the reckless driver and the careless driver. I would just as soon have them protect me from those drivers than have them protect me from myself. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pincel. With that, members, is there anyone else from the public that wishes to testify either in favor or in opposition to House File 106? Seeing no additional witnesses, I'd like to call on Representative Thiessen again if you have any final thoughts to share with the committee before we debate and vote on your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, I would just rest on what I think was very compelling testimony, both from law enforcement, from families who had tragedies in their own lives. I just think this makes good sense. It has public support. It'll save lives. And, you know, it is against the law in Minnesota to drive your car without a seatbelt. This is just giving law enforcement the tools that you have to enforce any other law. So I appreciate your support. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Representative Thiessen. Members, do you anyone wish to further discuss this bill before we vote? Comments? Okay, well, with that, then, Representative Leader renews his motion to recommend passage of House File 106 and re-refer to the Public Safety and Civil Justice Committee. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed?
No.
No? We have one no, and the motion passes. And with that, the committee is adjourned.
Thank you.